Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to Podcart's Life is Like a Box of Records podcast. My name is Helena Rafai. Occasionally, we bring in special guests to talk about the songs that have soundtracked their lives so far. For rights reasons, music might be shorter than the original song. This week's guest is Blue Kirkhope. Blue has worked over the past 5 years with well-known independent record labels based in London, including Matador Records and Erase Tapes. Originally a Glasgow native, she has first-hand experience within Scotland's music scene, helping to nurture and publicise local talent. She has since returned to home soil and is communications and events executive at Scottish Music Industry Association. She is also part of the Music Declares emergency team, who are campaigning to raise awareness over the lack of action surrounding climate change. Hello, Blue.
Hello, Helena.
Welcome to Podcart.
Thank you for having me.
So, Life is Like a Box of Records, and I've asked you to pick 7 songs. And we've kind of changed things up and asked to pick a song from a film that's relevant to you as well, which I think is going to be something really interesting going by your track list. First of all, can you please tell the ladies and gentlemen and everyone else out there who you are?
Yeah, so my name is Blue Kirkhope. I'm the Communications and Events Executive at the Scottish Music Industry Association, and we run the Scottish Album of the Year Award.
You've also got extracurricular interests as well. Please tell us about those.
Are you referring to my stomping around in the hills?
In the nature. Is that actually, that's not even grammatically great, is it? In the nature.
I'll do.
Yeah, so in the nature, what is this? I want to delve into that later, but
I mean, it certainly relates to some of my track choices as well.
Yeah,
I guess I've been walking around Scotland for a few years now. Music definitely has a presence within that. I've done all sorts of trails. On the weekends, I climb mountains sometimes. It's a big part of my life outside of music, for sure.
Great. We'll be talking about that more later, along with you're really passionate about climate change as well. You have picked One Vision by Queen.
And I have indeed.
I was saying this on the last podcast. I really enjoy seeing, you know, I know for a fact that these were songs that really impacted people when they were children, when you see mm-hmm. a song. So what was it about this song that really stood out?
I mean, my dad's a massive, massive, massive Queen fan. I think it goes without saying that when we grew up, our parents' taste in music sticks to us. But this track in particular, we'd often go on road trips to the Highlands, and specifically when it got dark, we would put this track on. We had a cassette tape in the car. I think it was the album It's a Kind of Magic, which I actually can't say without thinking of that song. So we'd put it on in the dark, and for those who aren't familiar with the track, at the beginning it's like altered and distorted voices, which sound quite spooky. So when you're in the car with your 4 other siblings and your parents, in the dark, driving through a forest, it's kind of spooky. So that was quite prevalent throughout all our road trips and things. And it's also a really good track. I'd like to think that, and I've always said that I'm a fan of Queen out of nostalgia, but I think they're a fucking great band.
Yeah, no, they really are.
Yeah.
What's your kind of, do you have a first musical memory? Is there something that kind of really stands out for you?
I mean, I grew up in Cumbernauld, not the most magical of places, but we lived there throughout my childhood until I was 10 years old. And we just used to run around the living room dancing to Queen all the time. Queen's my only really vivid memory. When we had Springsteen, we had Bob Dylan. You know, I'm named after a Bob Dylan song, but it was always Queen that was present throughout my younger years.
So you... I know you through various different things within music. We first met at a record fair in Edinburgh. We were sat next to each other.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and it was Dead Beat Records.
Yeah.
And we got chatting.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Briefly. Mm-hmm. But you were part of a really a mad crowd of people that scared the shit out of me. And part of some of those people still do scare me.
They still scare me.
Yeah, well, there you go. How did you first get into kind of DIY music?
Totally by accident. I went to university and did creative writing. I always wanted to be a writer. And one day my friend Laura Ely, she called me. I was a huge fan of the band Sigur Rós at the time. They were performing at End of the Road Festival. And they were looking for an artist liaison last minute. Free ticket, you had to work all the time, but I could kind of nip down and see the band. So I said, do you know what? Yeah, of course. But I was so oblivious to the music industry that I thought that an artist liaison was, you know, painting the sets or something like that. Lo and behold, I turn up to the site and I end up looking after some of my favourite bands all weekend. So I left that festival with a new kind of lease of life, realising that I could work in music in a capacity that didn't mean I had to perform, because, I mean, I played piano, but I never wanted to be on stage. So I came back to Glasgow, and me and my friend Connor Goldie, we set up a wee label called Deadbeat Records, where we released a series of, you know, local DIY bands on vinyl, much to the dismay of our banks. And we hosted several nights across the city, mainly in broadcast. It was a really fun time. But from there, I actually got a job in London. And that's kind of when it all really began for me.
Okay. I want to move on as time goes on onto your next song. And I always get so excited when people pick music that I love, obviously, naturally. Laura Veers. And I mean, this song in particular, I know so many people that this is just their first pick. Why July Flame?
Do you know what? I must say, I find it really hard to narrow it down to one song. Laura Veers is massively important to me. I've loved her since I was 16 years old. I love her first album. I love Saltbreakers. I love everything. But this song probably sums her up the most. It was also during a time where I think I'd really forged my own relationship with music. And to be honest, I think I was quite surprised that I'd loved her for so long, because by that point I'd listened to, that was her fourth album that I'd listened to myself and had a relationship with, which says a lot actually. But it's a brilliant song, it's a beautiful song, and she's one of my favourite musicians for sure.
Were there any other, I mean, obviously it's really hard. I know how difficult it is to whittle it down to such a few songs. But were there any other musicians that you kind of were desperate to put in here, but they just missed the pick?
Lots and lots. Anne Briggs, she's probably my favourite folk singer of all time, but just there wasn't a song that stuck out for me as such with her. I just love her in general. Bert Jansch, adore his music. He's on the walls of my bedroom. I love him so much. Sean Paul. It was quite easy to ditch Sean Paul, I'm afraid. I listened to him a lot when I was at university, when I was getting ready to go out clubbing. So I had to put him in the rubbish pile, I'm afraid. But I do love you, Sean Paul.
You know how obviously people went through various periods of being part of scenes such as grunge or Britpop or techno or whatever. Was there any certain periods through your life that you were really kind of, you felt that was what you identified with, or you thought, I'm not leaving this. This is where it's at.
Oh my goodness. I actually have been thinking about this a lot. I would say when I initially started that label in Glasgow, I very much would have associated myself with, you know, the DIY punk scene. You know, I had a buzz cut, I ran around wearing black clothes, I still kind of do. But from there, I mean, I guess I've grown up. I guess I've matured a lot. I've been in London, had two very serious jobs at two big labels that have also defined my music taste. I went through a big classical period. I still love all this music, mind, but I think now it's really determined that folk and guitar music is probably my favourite music in the world. But then I love techno and electronic music too. So, but it's been really interesting to me looking back and doing this, for example, picking these tracks and seeing the timeline before me and seeing how I've transitioned from this little punk in Glasgow to a granny who likes listening to folk music while walking through the mountains.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice thing, actually.
And, I mean, obviously, I do, because I think that after this is when we can kind of really talk about London and the labels that you worked with. But David Bowie, he's obviously such a prominent figure for so many people. And it's like his back catalogue is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And you just think, where do I start? So how did you manage just to pick this song out of everything?
I must say, this song never stuck out for me on its own for me before, until I got in the car with my Nana one day. I'd bought some CDs, knowing fine well I'd be spending, I think it was a few days or so with my Nana down in Lincolnshire. And I stuck it on. You know, she must know who Bowie is, surely. And sure enough, I put on the album Hunky Dory. And when this song came on, she just belted it out. And it's such a fond memory of mine. And I put it on all the time around her. And it never fails to make us both smile and her dance and me laugh. And it's such a brilliant song.
Songs from either siblings or your grandparents or whatever that you kind of relate to them at all, or you have super fond memories of?
That's quite a difficult question, because both parties have been quite absent throughout my life, so I didn't have the fortune of having a relationship like that, musically, I guess. I mean, The Queen Bitch was the first song that actually did that for me.
And is that why that's such a fond memory?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Nils Fram is someone that is pretty special. And this song in particular, I don't want to obviously overtake your podcast here and your shining moment, but this song, I think if it comes to actually describing your heart bursting to someone, then this probably would be a soundtrack to it. I obviously want to go into what we were talking about with regards to you going down to London, because this is very significant. But why did you pick this song?
I was living in Paris at the time, actually, trying to work out what to do with my life, working in a pub. I think I just found his music online, actually. And I think, and this is massively, massively cliche, but this song and his music definitely influenced my life, changed my life to an extent. I play piano myself, and I'd never really heard it in this form before with electronic music. And I mean, it's 8 minutes long, and I've listened to it so many times, so I don't know how much of my life I've listened to this song. But yeah, it kind of flung the door open to more electronic music as well, I would say. Like I said, I've grown up listening to, you know, pop rock and punk music and all sorts, but this really kind of, I mean, also classical, bearing in mind, but... from there, I think it was the first moment I was like, I really know what music I like. I mean, he's definitely one of my favourite musicians. I mean, I was such a big fan to the extent that I got a megabus down to Manchester to see him. Ended up meeting him afterwards. Lo and behold, 3 years later from that moment, I ended up getting a job at his record label. So quite surreal to think the transition from... Perthshire to London and what journey that had just from listening to this song. So it definitely had a big impact on me.
London's a massive, it's like a meteor when you go down there. It is a shock to the system, both culturally and noise and smells and just atmospherically, it is off the scale. When you first went down to London and you started working with the labels, well, the first one, Matador, that you started working with, I mean, and as it progressed, how did you feel being in that city? I mean, obviously, it's like a film. It's, you know, when you see someone that comes from fucking Orkney and goes down to London and, you know, whatever. But how did you cope with that move, and how did you cope with work life and so on?
I'll be completely honest with you and tell you I did not cope. It was a really, really exciting point of my life. I look back in it and think of it fondly, actually. But I found out I got the job at Matador and I moved down. I think it was 2 weeks after I found out. I was just desperate to start. Ended up living in my friend's living room for a few weeks before I found a flat, and it was a total whirlwind. Just again, yet another cliche, just it felt like a dream. It didn't feel real at all. I moved from my little flat in Glasgow down to London. I never, ever, ever anticipated living in London. I never saw myself there, but, you know, opportunities took me there and I took them up and had an absolutely brilliant time, but a really difficult time. I guess I'd never really distinguished what anxiety what truly was before, and it kind of came alive when I was down there. So yeah, it was a really difficult time, but in terms of the job, my God, I had so much fun. And I guess by the point when I moved on from Matador to Race Tapes, you know, I'd learned a bit about the business, I'd grown up a little bit, stepped up in my role, became a PR marketing manager, And yeah, it was Nils label, and I ended up working on his album All Melody, which was, again, insane. It, just to think of me in Perthshire and the transition that I made from then. Yeah, what a whirlwind.
What was your fondest memory of being down there, if you could pick one?
People. I really miss my friends. I found it quite easy to be lonely in London. I often was lonely in London, but my favourite memories were just being out with the people that I love. Sounds so corny, actually, but it's true. I miss them a lot, and it's so lovely to be able to go down there on these terms, working in music in Scotland and being able to see them, and also just being able to leave.
What did you learn about yourself? I mean, because obviously that was such a transition, and it was such a massive shift for you. And what did you learn?
I think ultimately I had a lot of lessons to learn. A lot of them I learned in London. But I guess looking back in it as well, that I am capable. You know, I got jobs at two of my favourite labels, and I think maybe I do deserve to give myself a little bit of a pat on the back. But yeah, I was really young. I was 21 when I moved down to London as well. Yeah, I think I had a lot of growing up to do. Let's just put it that way.
So we're going to move on to a song now that's quite a departure. It's Alice Coltrane, and I didn't know this song.
You didn't know this song?
No,
okay.
And I love this. I always say this on podcasts. I love it when someone introduced me to something new. So please pronounce the title, because I've got a terrible thing of not being able to pronounce names, which is ironic when you're half Arab, let me tell you.
So it's Journey to Satchitananda.
Well done.
Thanks. I practiced a lot. I didn't really. It's actually pretty easy. Shamefully, I was a latecomer to Alice Coltrane. You know, I listened to John Coltrane a lot. David Byrne's label Luwaka Bop reissued her record Turiya Sangitananda. There's another hard pronunciation for you. And yeah, I completely fell in love with it. I think it came at a time in London, which refers back to our earlier conversation. It really helped my anxiety. I would go home and hammer Alice Coltrane's records, and this one in particular. It's funny because I was reading up about it. It was released in the 1970s. She had this like spiritual advisor that would visit her in her dreams called Swami Satchitananda. And John Coltrane had just died. And she had been through a lot of grief. And this record and this song is her not only experiencing that grief, but it's about transition. And it's funny just because at that point in my time in London, I was kind of looking north and hoping to move home at some point. And shortly after, my big Alice Coltrane phase, I moved back to Scotland. So, yeah, it's quite prominent for me. And also, Pharoah Sanders plays on the record and he's fucking brilliant. So, yeah, it's a beautiful song.
Am I allowed to ask you what it was that made you want to move back?
Scotland's my home. It's my home. I always knew London was temporary. I'm very glad I went down there, but north is always calling.
Yeah. And that kind of leads us on nicely to your passions, which are nature and everything surrounding it, really.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone that doesn't follow Blue on social media or whatever, you always look so serene whenever on social media, whenever you're in these places, but you've got such a kind of a bravery, like trekking to these places by yourself and just sitting on mountaintops and, you know, camping or whatever. I know how it feels. I do. And I think when you do have anxiety, as we both do in extreme forms, mm-hmm. now and again, then nature is one of the only things, if the only thing, that kind of makes you feel normal. Was there a particular trip or an experience that you remember and you thought, oh my God, this is it. It's an awakening. I just need to keep doing this.
Yeah, I remember it very vividly. When I first moved down to London, I didn't often get to go home, purely just because of money. I couldn't afford to come back as often as I wanted to. And having lived in Paris or prior to that, Glasgow, I was always kind of out and about. And to not have that kind of release, you know, Epping Forest just didn't really cut it for me, unfortunately. So I actually did the West Highland Way on my own. I think it must have been about 3-4 years ago now, raising money for the NSPCC. I guess I was doing that more to raise the money and for a cause that's very dear to me. And it's kind of one of those things that it was an idea that kind of fast forward. And when I was actually starting the trail, I was kind of, what the fuck am I doing? walking 5 days through Loch Lomond on my own. But just had the best time. I can't really explain what it was like to walk through those landscapes on your own, having never done it before. I mean, I've been on walks before, but nothing for that length of time. You know, I was walking 20 miles a day. And after that, I've done a long distance trail every year since. It's kind of become a bit of an addiction, I guess it's fair to say. I always kind of anticipate that coming each year. I usually do it in the summer. But I just love seeing Scotland, exploring Scotland. I've done the Afric Kintail Way. I've done half of the Cape Wrath Trail up to Cape Wrath Lighthouse. Yeah, it's a big part of my life.
And you're so passionate about it, but you're also, and I know you're going to hate me for this, but you've even, like, you're doing this podcast as part of the SMIA, North Rising,
mm-hmm.
and you are visiting places that I think it's really important what you're doing. You're visiting these places, Orkney, is it Shetland? And various others, but you are talking to people that are working within music in those areas. So it's almost a kind of, I know it's not truly, you know, fusing music and your love of nature, but it is to a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other element is place. I love exploring all these new places and, you know, whether it's the Western Isles or the Norse Islands. But I think it's important to shine a light on these people, you know, while they're geographically far away. It's actually not that far away, but it's such a benefit for me to be able to go and visit these places, but to see music in its kind of fine form there.
Scott Walker. I always get people to kind of do these chronologically, and obviously Scott Walker is, for many, you know, stereotypically, people would put that early on in their list. So The Old Man's Back Again, and this is a beautiful song. It is just... and I think that for many people that think that they don't know Scott Walker, they know, they must have heard something, or, you know, if they
haven't. Or the Walker Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. So why did you place this now, and why this song?
Because it's probably my favourite song. I've played this song in my car, in my room. It doesn't matter where I am, I can always play this song, and I've never, ever gotten bored of it, and I've never really had that with a song. I think I get bored quite easily, but yeah, Scott Walker's one of my favourite musicians, and when he passed last year, I was absolutely devastated.
The shadow crossed the sky, and it crushed it to the ground, just like a beast. The old man's back again. The old man's back again. I seen a woman standing in the snow. She was silent as she watched them take her man. Teardrops burned her cheeks, for she thought she'd heard the shadow had left this land. The old man's back again. The old man's back again. The crowds just gathered, their faces turned away, and they queue all day like dragons of disgust. Older women whispering, wondering just what these young hotheads.
I actually discovered him probably in my early 20s, so he wasn't prominent throughout my life by any means, but I've devoured his music since, whether it's Scott 3 or 4 or his more kind of eclectic stuff with Sono. I think he's fantastic, and this song is just beautiful. And I have I'm a sucker for strings, and his voice is amazing.
Most of these musicians that you've picked, do they soundtrack when you're out, you know, within nature, and it's like as if I'm describing something that's alien when you're within nature. Obviously, we all do, but you know, when you're in the outdoors and so on, and music is such a constant for many people, and they tie it in and they use it to soundtrack the most amazing experiences of their lives. When you are out in the outdoors and you're experiencing these things that make you truly happy, do these songs still soundtrack those moments?
I guess when I was first kind of forging a relationship with the outdoors, I remember on the West Highland Way, an artist and a friend of mine, he actually made a playlist for me to listen to throughout the trail, and I quite often listen to it, but I think the older I've gotten, the more and more and more I've walked in these landscapes, I prefer the silence now, and listening to the birds and the sea. It's only really when I'm in the car, I guess, when I'm out in nature, that I would really stick something on. But I guess that actually leads into the next track, because that's one that I would put on when I'm walking.
Which is, so I've asked you to pick a song from a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did not expect this. I got a bit of a shock. So tell us about the song.
Were you expecting Jurassic Park? Because I almost picked Jurassic Park, I
must
say. I
don't know what I was expecting. I just wasn't expecting. I don't know, I was thinking something a bit more avant-garde. But yeah,
sorry to disappoint. It's just Bob Dylan, I'm afraid.
No, but I think it's just more of the fact that you know, the actual film as well. So
I love a Western film.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you like Young Guns?
I've not seen that one.
Oh my God, you need to see Young
Guns.
Right, okay, and Young Guns 2.
Okay, there's two?
Yeah, The second one's, it's one of those films that the sequel's better.
Well, you need to watch Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
Oh, I've seen that.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah.
Are you into it?
Yeah, no, fancied them.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, same.
Into that dirty vibe. Not washing.
Dirty cowboys.
Yeah.
Can it be?
Thank you.
So this was included in the playlist my friend had made for me, and I really like it. I mean, it's a beautiful song, but in terms of how it's informed my walks and things, there's no lyrics. It doesn't really interrupt what I'm doing. Yeah, this song just doesn't really disrupt those walks in any way. And it's one I always play. I always go back to it, no matter what. It's genuinely, it's a beautiful soundtrack. The entire album's gorgeous.
I want to talk about the climate change activity that you've been part of, because I can see how passionate you are about it, and I also know that are so invested in exploring our country and the world, then you realise how vitally important this is. And I think if you've just got any fucking common sense as well, then, you know. So yeah. Please tell us about that and why this is so important to you.
I'm kind of annoyed at myself I haven't gotten involved with it a lot sooner, actually, and there's certainly still more that I could be doing. I'm part of a working group team called Music Declares Emergency. We're a group of people, in fact it's for everyone, whether it's musicians, people working in music in any capacity, standing together to declare a climate and ecological emergency. There's a declaration that you can sign on the website. We've had, you know, Radiohead sign, John Hopkins, Annie Lennox. We've had a range of people sign the declaration, just I guess promising that they'll do their best to make changes. It's early days. I think it launched about a year ago. I mean, I guess an important emphasis we make is, while it is important that we all individually take action, you know, whether it's small things like get rid of your plastic bottles, etc., but it's a systemic change we need, and I guess the more voices we have alongside this, the more possible it's going to be for us to push the government to implement change. Yeah, it's quite scary. I think it's affected my anxiety a lot, I must say. I think about it every day. Just in the past couple of weeks, I've kind of had to close the door on it just a little bit, just to kind of take it all in, to be honest. But yeah, it's scary, but it's amazing to work with such a amazing group of people and be able to inform this in my work with the SMIA. But yeah, and if you haven't signed up to the declaration, please do, because we need to do what we can.
And we'll include the links as well on our website. I think that obviously when things are that huge, it's you just don't know where to start, and you want to do things more quickly than you can. And that's when the anxiety sets in, because you just think, if I don't do this soon, then things are going to escape or whatever. I guess it's about that kind of butterfly effect. And if one person does something, then it makes a massive change. And if everyone does that one little thing, then the impact is huge. You're doing a lot. And I think that you are often quite tough on yourself as well. But if you could, I mean, say you've got 3 wishes for the next 10 years, what are they?
Net zero carbon emissions. I should probably be kinder to myself, yes. You know, going swimming and going out hiking isn't always going to make you feel better, so it's about finding balance with everything. I'm still learning how to do that. Third, climb more mountains. Always.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to pick the songs and talk to me, because I know you're my friend. and if she says to you that she's not, then obviously
you are my friend.
But it's I know how tough this is for you, because you A, hate the sound of your own voice, and B, you just hate talking in general. So yep. This is it's very humbling for you to do this.
No, thank you for having me. You're a pleasure to talk to, but thanks. I also can't wait to go to my bedroom and lock the door for the rest of the night.
Oh, that sounds...
No, I'm joking. That sounds
it. I'm going to keep that in. I am going to keep this in, because it almost sounds as if you've had such a great experience that you need to go home to your bedroom and lock the door.
I didn't mean it like
that.
So
we'll end the podcast right there. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.